Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Hello. Suresh?
Oh, I can hear something.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, there we go. Right,
okay, sorry. Let's start with Oiva. Okay, let's do the introduction.
Shall I do an intro?
I'm last, I'm last.
No, you're first.
No, I thought I was last.
You're first.
Why doesn't Suresh do the intro?
Suresh, do you want to do the intro?
You're so tired.
Yeah. No, let's introduce him. Let's introduce him. It'll be funnier if we
do. Okay. Shall I do an intro?
Yeah, go.
Welcome back to Red Switch, the podcast. It's been quite a long time since we had four people on the show again, because it's been three people for a while. So I can very happily announce that you have me, Bart, Oiva.
Hi.
Adamya.
Moi.
And Suresh.
What's going on?
Suresh is now in Australia at the moment, which means that he had to come out of bed very early to be on the show. So it speaks for itself in how he seems to be acting. How are you doing, Suresh?
I'm not happy. It's actually far too early for me. I'm not going to be the best conversationist at the moment. I might just fall asleep at the mic, but we'll see how I go.
What time do you regularly wake up then?
You know, I'm trying to get up earlier, so this is kind of nice, but still it sucks.
And it's like Monday.
I got up at, 6:30 today. And then I sat in bed and started thinking about my life and why I'm doing this. What time's over there?
It is now 9 p.m., 8 p.m.
8:30.
8:21.
8:21.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, what are we going to talk about today?
Where are you living, Suresh?
I live in Melbourne. But in the suburbs, so Glenmaverley.
Yeah, great place there.
So it's like the south. About half an hour from the beach. About half an hour.
What are you doing nowadays?
What I'm doing? I'm just working now. My uni starts back up in about a month. And then I have like my final year. And then and all that stuff. What about you boys? You guys still got a year and a half left?
Yeah, well, two and a half years maybe.
Depending on if you get a master's or not,
Yeah, that's right. Are you guys thinking about doing it or what?
I'm not going to do it.
I might do it.
I do not know.
Wait, you are what?
Yeah.
What's that?
Oiva doesn't know yet.
Doesn't know. How does one become a professional philosopher?
Chat shit.
Fish. Fishing is one way. Yeah.
That's a philosopher's lifestyle.
Fishing?
Yeah.
Crazy times.
You know?
Well, they're really interesting questions.
I see.
Oiva, how can we make conversations better? How can you win at conversations?
You mean like every single conversation?
How do you make discussions as productive as possible? How do you get the most out of a discussion, out of a conversation? What do I do?
So yeah, how to make discussions work for you. I'd rather ask you guys, what do you think? What is the best conversation you've had?
In my life?
In your life? Recent history? I don't know. What is the best conversation you guys have had?
I know how to keep a conversation going, but I don't know if that means it's the best conversation I've had. Well, I just ask people like, questions all the time.
I think the best conversation you've ever had is like a question like saying, what's, you know, the best, I don't know, the three best days of your life. You can't really pinpoint three best days or the best day in your life or the best conversation you've had. But you can probably think of some good sort of conversations you have had with people. And they tend to be when both of you are answering the same question as of you both are talking about the same thing. A lot of people, when they have conversation with people, they haven't, if there's an argument, then normally both of them aren't really on the same page or arguing about the same thing. Obviously, there are some cases where they're on the same page, but a lot of the times I feel that the interpretation of the topic is slightly different, and that's why there is a slight argument.
Hmm.
So a good conversation.
Suresh?
Yeah, no, usually I actually quite like a good argument. It's good fun for me. I think that's where you get the best conversations, when both people like are really into their topic and they're like, you know, and then it's sort of fueled by emotion and then it becomes like pride on the line, and so you start getting really into it.
So yeah, they're passionate about it.
Yeah, if you're both passionate about the one topic and your views are different, then the conversation becomes good because there's usually good points on both sides, but you really want to get yours to be the winning one.
But it's hard to pinpoint that exact topic because sometimes...
Yeah, of course. That's why you don't get a good conversation that's why there's small talk. You don't always get a good conversation. It's not something that comes by every time.
What did you mean earlier when you said that you can keep hold a conversation? As in you can keep it going, yeah.
So I'm like talking about like small talk. So you could just ask about like crap, like weather and holidays and how uni's going or something like that. So you just ask questions about stuff that they most likely don't care too much about, or they could. You never know. But once you sort of like you sort of sift through questions until you hit one that they're sort of a little bit into. Because what I really find is that when you talk to someone, they usually love talking about the most interesting topic to themselves, which is themselves, right?
Mm.
So if you talk about them and then you find something that they're sort of really into, and then that can just like ignite a fire and they can just start blabbing on heaps. And then, boom, you started a semi-interesting conversation.
Yeah. So you said that it's first very idle, like it's idle talk. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, definitely.
It's only like talk for talk's sake. But then if you kind of like strike a chord with them and you find something they're interested in, which probably is just them. So is that like a moment where you one-up them or just... listen to them?
It's not where you one up them. It's just like it's the way of getting out of that place where you're talking to people about you know when you're talking for talking's sake and you're sort of just trying to get through the niceties and stuff until you actually find something that you guys want to talk about, because usually at the start both people aren't that interested in what's being spoken about. So you do have to like look for a chord, I guess.
Well, when I'm having any kind of small talk with people, I think the main aim is not what we're actually talking about, but it's to kind of sense whether or not they think in the same way, or if I can get along with them, which could be based on how they talk about themselves or about the topics at hand. And aside from that, I'm trying to, just like you said, find something that they're really interesting or that they can really talk about, and that I'm also interested in listening to, and then, or find a common thing that we can talk about and then talk about that. But up until then, it's just sort of kind of trying to discover what they're saying, what they're interested in.
Yeah, sure.
Do you guys prefer conversations which are about people or things that are not in control? For example, do you like talking about life experiences that both of you have had, or topics that are not related to you directly, for example politics or sport or something like that? Which ones do you tend to like hit off more?
I don't understand people who talk about sports too much unless they do the sports themselves.
Well, what about politics?
It's similar to politics as well, because politics today feels like people just follow it to hurt themselves and feel bad.
Okay.
I think there's a real chance here to have a discussion, which is kind of what we want to have.
What did you say, Uwe? They follow it to what themselves?
They only follow politics so that they can feel bad in return.
I know people that follow politics so they can sound smart.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's different reasons. Because, like, usually in the workplace and stuff, people always talk about politics, and if you don't know what they're talking about, you're out of a good conversation.
Mm.
So people pour hours into understanding what's happening with politics just so that they can have a good conversation with people so that they appear intelligent?
Genuinely, yeah. Mm. I reckon.
Is politics... Well, actually, that makes sense because really for 99% of people, politics doesn't have a very big impact on them besides from the fact that they can talk about it. You do have some, that it has some impact on your life, but for example, me following the American elections, that really doesn't have, makes, that's not such a big deal to me, besides from the fact that I want to be informed about it in case someone asks me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always a good conversation starter, isn't it? Like, what did Trump do this week? Blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, then you can it's just, very easy.
Someone can go on a rant.
But the reason why you say that is because then you can within 5 seconds get to an agreement with someone like, oh, you hate Trump as well, and then you can feel like you're somewhat connected. That's why some of these very extreme stories work so well or are so liked. This is just me coming up with theories from the top of my head, but. The reason why these extreme stories might be interesting to us is because we can't possibly imagine anyone disagreeing with us on it. So it's a perfect thing to talk about because most people will share this opinion with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, no, that's true.
Let's not delve too much into the politic topic. You said something interesting earlier, Suresh. Do you think good conversations in general are about arguments? Because you said,
what's that, sir?
Do good conversations generally have arguments?
I think there's two types of good conversations out there. There's the argumentative one, which I find, these are just personally, I find that interesting. Or the banter-esque one, which I just talk shit, try to piss people off, which I guess in one way is sort of the argumentative one as well. So, yeah. And a good argument is always fun, I think.
Mm.
Some people are not very argumentative, though. So that's just me, because I know some people that always don't want to or always avoid a confrontation. So if there's, like, differing beliefs, they sort of jump ship pretty quickly.
Mm.
Or they like shut up.
What about you guys?
I think I'm one of the other kinds where I basically avoid confrontation.
You're one of those. I think I'm kind of opposite. I hate conversations to do with people's lives and very, really petty, small matters. I don't really care about them that much and I avoid them. Probably why I don't have many friends.
How horrible does that sound?
I'm not interested in people's lives.
I do not talk about other people and their lives at all.
Yeah, like gossip. Like people like, there's
okay, yeah, that's
people love a bit of gossip. I'm not a big, huge fan of that. I mean, I don't mind it.
Okay, yeah. You made it sound as if you wouldn't talk to someone.
No, I wouldn't be like, if someone says, I would say, how's your day? And if they like go on. But there's some people, I don't know whether you know, but all they talk about is themselves and like, they really just talk about just what they've been doing, what their whole day is, and they'll make their life sound crazy. I kind of get bored when they do talk about that, especially at university.
I don't find anything wrong with that.
I don't think that's a good conversation. I mean, I wouldn't want to talk about that.
Yeah, like, I think, because you can't always have a deep conversation. Sometimes you just want one. So that's what I meant by the banterous conversation. Mm-hmm. They'll talk about something and it'll be funny, like what they did with their day, or just be stupid stuff. And you know, you can have a laugh out of it. I think that's always good value.
To have a good conversation, you have to have several bad conversations or meaningless conversations to really have a good conversation, to really appreciate, you know, talking about something that matters. Because if you always talked like that, always talked something meaningful and didn't have any banter or like, you know, said that in an Australian accent then. talk about other people's lives or your life and, like, you know, small talk, then you won't appreciate a good conversation or a good discussion when it comes along.
But what is a good conversation when it comes along?
I say, it's
Okay, so maybe we should separate some terms here. If we can say that these forums are just the idle talk, not in a negative sense, but rather just that the talk is not supposed to have some sort of destination or something that is just going to impact their lives heavily, deeply, whatever. It's just to pass along the time to with someone and connecting with another person. It's just everyday talking, right? But then I guess this argumentative kind of discussion is something else. It's something where the person is trying to find out something, inquire something, or understand better maybe what the other one is trying to say. So there you're already changing opinions. So I think we should distinguish between the two, a few forms of conversation already here. So how do you have a good discussion of opinions or like political matters or
it has to be, I think, religion, a good discussion, philosophy. Right? A good discussion. I'll use this analogy. It's quite good. Suresh will probably get it. It's like a tennis match between Nadal and Federer. Two different styles, and it goes back and forth. So it's not one person hitting a ball against like a wall and the other person not taking part.
I get you.
But it's two different styles, but they're on the same wavelength.
Yeah. In the same league, they know what they're doing. Yeah. I get you.
So both are around the same level. So let's say the topic you're talking about is pianos. Bart might know a lot more about pianos than I will. So the discussion will not be very good because you'll just be talking at me.
This is what I need to tell you about pianos. Finally, you've allowed me the time. No, but I get what you mean.
Yeah. So it has to be something both people have a similar knowledge for. It has to be something that both people slightly differ on. And it's something that both people can actually converse about rather than one person just lecturing the other person and the other person not getting a say.
An argument would very quickly stop if one person knows a lot more about it than another. And they do a little show off of what all their knowledge, and then the other guy's like, oh great, right, that's it.
Either that or they're completely dismissive. I don't think there's much point about when you're arguing with someone and they have a lot less knowledge, because you've already won. There's no point arguing something with someone. For example, if I say the piano doesn't have any strings, I'm so stupid that there's no point for you to argue that point against me. You might as well just say, okay.
Well, that's where I'm probably different from some other people, where at this point I'd think, oh, this is the perfect time to educate you. And then I get my little like chart and start drawing, like, this is how it works. But yeah, it that wouldn't be an argument. So you have to have a somewhat similar or have thought about the thing you're talking about before an equal amount. So the two people discussing it both have some understanding of it. And the best discussions are the ones where you have different understandings of it, right? Or where there's a divergence in our understanding or our thinking about a topic. And that's what you're exploring by having an argument. And the most productive argument is the one where you can stick to the most interesting place where your opinions diverge, in my opinion, and not talk about what you agree with, but just find, like, okay, where do we differ and why do we differ in our opinions? What underlies the difference in our opinion? And that can be very interesting if both of the people are participating in a similar way, where they're being respectful of the other person.
Mm.
And so it's a competition in a sense, because you want your opinion to win.
Quickly to retake.
But it's also very cooperative.
So let's think about that position. That there's two people who think about different things, but surely they can think about the same thing and then trying to find new ground or whatever just by cooperating together. But what Suresh said earlier about this, the person who will just be interested about themselves, it's very crucial here as well to think about the self for these guys. So two people, they most likely are interested in themselves mostly, but once they start talking about something, both of them have to listen to each other so they can get on the same page, and then they can understand each other better, and then solve their differences. And maybe finally be able to discuss the matter and get further in understanding what they are going to conversate about, right? So it's a very dialectical, right? So there's two people and both of them are their opposites to each other, especially in English language. You have the subject and then the object. And
That's where probably idle conversation differs from, because in idle conversation you don't need that much depth in the knowledge. You can probably talk about, you know, trivial things, like if you met someone on a bus and they said, oh, what do you think about the Trump presidency or something like that, or the Federer Nadal match, anything that you can probably say.
You would talk about the Trump presidency though if you just met someone on the bus. Well, I think that's,
well, not like that's one of your like friends, like you don't talk to that much. You like, you're like, oh, that Trump
guy. You wouldn't though, because you don't just jump into politics with someone you don't know well.
No,
you don't think so?
I'd say there's a list of things that you can talk about with new like people.
Get politics, into an argument.
Not new people. I mean, like people that you know. So, for example, like your friends, but some people, not friends that you've not, you know, you don't tend to talk to that much. But you can just, when after discussing that, if you go into some idle conversation about a topic or an argument, like we've had this plenty of times in our course, when you can talk to someone about presidency, the Trump presidency or sport, but you can't really go in depth with it because you don't know their knowledge that much. I think,
do you mean to say that when you meet somebody, you might not be able to immediately know what they think about it, so you probably won't be able to talk about it.
You'll step very finely and you'll be very sort of generalistic.
Like if somebody's negative about Trump presidency, you wouldn't want to talk about politics with them if you are very positive about Trump.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to get
confrontational when you know there's
either little time,
exactly,
or don't know how you match up with someone.
Yeah.
Because no one really wants to get embarrassed, do they? No one wants to like start an argument and then no one wants to go in an argument knowing that they will lose.
You wouldn't want to bring that up at all if you don't know the person that well. You just talk about some other stuff that's probably funny or something. I don't think you'd jump into any politics with them. I definitely wouldn't just... If someone I didn't know too well and I was having a chat to, I wouldn't be like, yeah, so fuck Donald Trump, right? And they'd be like, what? I like him. And then, you know, you've got a whole issue.
But what about... Probably sport you can do a lot more then. So with sport, you can really have an idle conversation with someone. I can probably talk to most people about the football or the tennis that's happening, and they'll probably have a generic view, and that's more of an idle conversation.
But it's also different there because it's generally accepted that people will support different teams.
Yeah.
So no one's gonna like have a fit of rage when you say which team you support. They're gonna act up. They could act upset, but it's all within this boundary of it's kind of joking upset.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and if you are willing to kill someone over like football, then it's pretty ridiculous as well. But usually with politics, it's your like intrinsic beliefs that you're questioning.
Well, there's certain clubs that do hate each other to a point where there will be.
Okay, that's all fine. So let's just say that there are conversations and topics that are very argumentative in their essence. So bringing those up with strangers and random people, you wouldn't want to bring up with. But if you feel like they are a person who you could very well argue with, then you can bring up these topics. And if you feel like it, you can understand the topic better when you find this person and discuss about them. So it's definitely has to do with the essence of the topic, but also with what the person is like.
How do you make, so we kind of understand how discussions work, who to have arguments with. You don't have it with people you met, and there are certain topics that you don't argue about with people that you've just met. But let's granted all of that, you do know this person, and you do know that this person knows about this topic, and you start arguing. How can you maintain that it is a productive conversation where you don't both end up angry at each other?
Okay, so probably the easiest way to develop a conversation with them would be starting by defining the terms, because terms usually tend to be very objective, and both usually agree on what the terms are. Once you've laid out what the terms are, the terminology of the conversation, and obviously in a lot of sciences and subjects, this is already based on some truths. So you already have the terms, and then you can discuss what the terms are, and you can find that the other person might think about the terminology already differently. So once you've worked out those through, you can see where you both are, what page you are on, and then you can start developing a more understanding on the other branches of the subject, and not just limiting yourself on what you know, but also arguing more broader knowledge of the topic and the subject by just listening to what they have in their minds about the different terminology in the subject. So I think that's at least one point you can keep in mind when you want to make a good conversation.
When you're debating, the big thing about debating is not only to be accurate about your terminology, is to stick to the question being asked. So what you're arguing about or what you're discussing about, it's very, to have a great discussion, you don't want to really deviate too much from that topic too quickly. So obviously you can slowly move away from that topic once both of you come to an agreement, but you don't want to start jumping from different question to different question.
But that's tricky, because sometimes a tangent, the reason why you go down a tangent is because it relates to why you hold a certain opinion. So taking a going on a tangent is your way of explaining to the other person, this is why I believe this. And in order to explain that, you have to divert from the question at hand.
Yeah.
Just like we're doing now, where I'm making a tangent about tangents, where we're having a little micro discussion about whether tangents are good, inside a greater discussion to make discussions good.
So the meta conversation was that how you're going to define the terms. So you exactly just did that with the tangent there. But how can you focus on the topic, obviously, is to define broader, more abstract terms first, and also realizing what the other person knows already. That's something you should be able to imply with your conversation, obviously, if you are clever. But focusing on topic, when you ask a question, keep in mind that question throughout the tangent, throughout the conversation, and remind yourself why you asked it and what did you ask. This way you should not lose your track. You wouldn't just disperse yourself into different tangents and then lose track completely. So when you've asked a question, or somebody's asked you a question, always after you've gone on about something, trying to retrace back that question you asked. That's a very easy way.
Actually reminds me of...
there's a method I use.
Someone I was talking with today, who every time I asked a question, he started on what seemed like an answer to the question, and then started blabbering about some random theory, and then ended up with a really positive message of, yeah, just do this. And I was like, that didn't even answer in any way my question. And then I asked it again, and he just does the same thing again, where he just starts from what seems slightly relevant, and then he just goes on a random little story and never gets to the question.
Another problem is, this is what you learn in when you do interviews, is I don't know why people don't use interview practices more, is when someone asks you a question, you don't want to immediately jump into your answer. That you will probably want to take 3, 4, 5 seconds to actually think through what you're going to say. Because this is to linking with the fact that staying on topic, a lot of people, when there's someone asks them a question, they start the answer and then they realize they haven't thought about it, so they start deviating away, start, you know, answering different questions. And that's probably answers why that the guy that you're talking to was jumping from conversation to conversation. He must have seen your question. Rather than thinking about what you just asked, he must have started answering the question and thought, And this is your mind wanders so much when you're talking to one single person.
The analogy you used about the tennis does not work here because you would have to stand still and let the ball hit the wall.
No, but you have pauses in the game, don't you? You have pauses in the game, don't you?
A better analogy is, this is what I've heard, is...
Bowling.
Bowling.
What? I did that as a joke. What,
bowling as in cricket?
So, no, bowling. Bowling alleys, you
No, but focus, that's a single person game.
You focus, you think through what you are planning to do. No, it's a team game.
But tennis, you know,
bowling is great. I think, why do you say that it's more bowling than it is like?
Bowling, you focus completely your thoughts just to strike through that one opinion you have at the moment. And when you launch it, you've launched the ball, the thoughts, and you hit.
No, but see, okay.
Full strike. And I agree. Everyone sees that. Everyone understands it.
Now, what you're missing about tennis is that in tennis, it's a problem-solving game, not simply about how to hit the ball, but what the other guy's thinking. You gotta put yourself in his position and be like, okay, he's gonna do this and he's gonna think this, so I gotta combat that with this, which is much like an argument. You gotta know what the devil's advocate's gonna be, and you gotta be like, okay, that's what he's probably gonna say, and so this is what I'm gonna come back with.
But we weren't talking just only about arguments. We were talking about discussion and conversation. Obviously, arguments
with discussion and conversation, it's not so different, is it? That where you'd have to think, this is what he's going to think and this is what I'm going to say.
You also have 21 seconds between each game, which gives you breathing space to think what you're going to do next.
Okay, I understand both of the opinions here. So I feel like I can add some value. The reason why it's not that like tennis is because with tennis, you are looking at what they're doing just to plan what you're going to respond. And you also have to do something which is anticipate where they're going to go so that you can start thinking about that already, which is just like saying, just after I finish talking, you're going to immediately reply. Because you've been anticipating what the end of my sentence was so that you could say something smart instead of waiting after I've finished talking to then come up with something that's actually relevant to what I was originally saying. This anticipation actually breaks or makes it a less valuable discussion because you're not listening as much as you are just assuming things.
Let's break off the analogy.
Yeah, I think we're coming...
But Suresh disagrees. I want to hear what Suresh has to say.
Yeah, if you assume in tennis, right... I don't know if we keep going back to this, but if you assume the wrong thing, it's the same thing. You have to completely adjust your stance and move towards the unassumed position, right? You can't just be in the assumed position and hope it works out, because then that's how you're going to easily lose the game. You also have to be versatile and change positions and hit the ball back regardless of where it goes.
These analogies are just kind of very confusing.
The reason why all these game analogies work is because...
We've deviated from the point here.
Yeah.
I'm just
now, the ball is yellow. Conversations are yellow. So, no. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so...
Okay, wait, but bring us back to the point.
I mean, discussions can work for everyone without arguments. Heated disagreements. It's like arguments and debates. Yeah, sure, that's a political thing that happens. But discussions where you are just trying to understand what the other person is saying, you listen to them wholeheartedly because you don't really know what they know yet. You have to listen to them and then take it as it is, obviously, but also criticize it if there is something that you think... it's not working. So, in that sense, very productive conversation requires two listeners, not just one listener, two listeners. So there's always the one person who instructs the other one to arrive at the same point, arrive at the same page, so that they can understand both better what their positions are in the subject matter. So, I mean. The analogies are fine. Both of them give good examples.
Yeah.
I think really breaking down an analogy kind of breaks the point of an analogy itself. It's kind of a little, if you really, really break it down, well, tennis, you're actually hitting a ball. I'm never having hitting a ball in a conversation, so.
Yeah, obviously, an analogy is different in an infinite amount of ways and similar in an infinite amount of ways. So, yeah, but it's also worth thinking, why do you think that analogy works? And saying, okay, what are the similarities? That's, yeah, the differences are...
We're really using up the time here.
Or obvious, yeah. Okay, should we break away and do the next topic?
If I had to answer your original question for how to make discussions better,
yeah,
it would be to listen more.
2 ears, one mouth. That means you should listen twice as much.
Okay.
So attempt to understand the other more than you try to be understood yourself.
Yeah. Mm.
I think for a discussion, you should just talk over them and then shout at them until they get the point.
Yeah.
That's the perfect way of doing it. And make sure they can't get anything in.
Yeah.
That's the best way of
basically doing both talk at each other at the same time.
If they can't say an opinion, if they can't say their opinion, it's like they don't have one. I can't hear what you're saying.
I just make sure they can't speak. And annoy them enough so they just get frustrated and piss off.
Just look at your phone every time they're talking.
Sorry, I'm really going to take this.
All right.
So to answer your question, whatever, that's how you make a discussion better.
Good
I quite enjoy Australia.
Yeah, well, you live there, so it's kind of a good thing that you enjoy it. But if anything can bite you, that can kill you, that probably lives there, doesn't it?
The funny thing is, I was at my mate's house and there was a party, and there's this thing called a redback spider.
Yeah,
it's probably one of the most one of the most venomous spiders.
It was there,
and it was just crawling on him, and I was like, dude, there's a fucking redback. And I've never seen someone throw a chair so far in my life. It looked like freaking shot put. It just absolutely swung the crap
out of
me.
That's the problem with Australia, you know. You can be in a party and then the next second you're literally dead. That's why the population is so low.
We have anti-venom. We have anti-venom.
The funny thing is, in Australia, they had this thing where they had an animal problem, and they brought in... They loved introducing new species to the country, which completely fucks up the ecosystem. Because that's not how the world works.
Yeah, these animals had spent millions of years getting used to the people around
like
them.
This,
and then a new guy
just
comes
to... You just put a sloth in the fucking UK, like the rainforest. It comes from the rainforest, but if you put it somewhere else...
You know cane toads? They accidentally introduced them.
Yeah,
they're like, shit, we better get
there's
those.
So many of them. And then they got another thing. What did they bring it up
for? Yeah, they got, like, I think it was rabbits or something else. And then they just, like, because rabbits bang so much. They're like, crap, we have too many rabbits. And then they got, what else did they get in?
Because you have to have a different animal to
keep.
Yeah, you have
pythons?
To have foxes in check for rabbits.
Or pythons already there?
I don't know if we have pythons.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not pythons.
Okay, do we want to do...
The next segment.
So, Suresh.
Okay.
What do you want to talk about?
Today we got fake news. Boom.
Woo!
And so that's been in the media heaps. We're talking about fake news. Trump's all about this fake news. But we got to figure out first, what is fake news?
Mm-hmm.
And so
define the terms.
So I'm going to define the terms. And most people think it's like any website where they... report incorrectly, or they report like misinformation stuff. It's actually websites that are solely made for the purpose of trying to fool people. So it's not a media source at all. It's just a source where they make articles that try to fool people, and then they usually spread these articles across like a social media. And so it's like the stuff there is solely crafted to invoke emotion and to fool people into believing untrue things. And they use this because they can get a lot of revenue from it. So apparently there was this teenage kid in, I think it was Serbia, that was making $3,000 a day US solely by making fake news on a random website. So there's a lot of money to be made in this. And so with the recent elections, I don't know if there was much break. Fake news in Brexit, but with the recent election, there was heaps. And so a lot of people are complaining that it changed the vote and changed how people thought. And so there needed to be something to do about it. Yeah. And so that is what fake news is. Have you guys read anything?
Well, I think it arises probably from fake news, probably arises from people, this illusion because of the social media boom of ITKs, so in the nose. So people that know things when they don't actually know, they're just completely bullshitting you. So I can make an account now. You can go on a website, buy followers, and have 30, 40,000 followers by spending some money, and then just start posting utter rubbish. And that will get retweeted, reposted, and normally a media company will see, oh, what's trending, what's happening. And a lot of their sources are very much social media based, and they say, oh, this is what's happening. And I think that's where a lot of fake news is coming from, because of the social media bubble that we are in. There's a lot, probably I'd say over like half, the more than half, probably about 75-80% of the news that you hear now is not necessarily complete lie, but it's very twisted, and a lot of the facts are either hidden or completely misrepresented because of these ITKs.
Can I offer up another explanation for fake news?
No.
Yeah.
You or any website makes money by people visiting the website because they've got advertisements on the page. So they need someone to go to that page and they get paid. To get page views to grow exponentially, it needs to be shared a lot. And that sharing needs to be shared even more. And so in order to get people to go to your page, you can hear you drinking water so loudly. It's fucking annoying. Just have a sip, put it down.
I'm gonna have a sip.
It's so loud. So you're gonna come on to
Couldn't you just let me finish? I would have finished.
Yeah, finish now. I'm giving you some time.
Oh my god. How can someone be so loud at drinking?
How can someone be so loud? You could be like throwing it around. It would make less sound.
It's like you're doing this.
Okay. So my other explanation for it. Oh, where was it left off? Where did you start drinking that when it was really loud?
What I found interesting about
this. No, I have to make my point. Otherwise, I have to cut out my entire speech, and that's really annoying.
What were you saying?
The reason, the explanation. The way you can get an article shared more is by having it really build on emotions. And so having something that is completely absurd and ridiculous, like makes you really angry, like something sort of showing Trump to be an evil racist that just did this, that is a perfect piece of information to get shared. And to then, as long as enough people look at the page, you make a lot of money from that. So people are intentionally playing on emotions and disregarding any kind of factual information or the idea of saying what is the correct news, because they get so much more money by saying things that upset people.
Yeah.
Now, so, do you guys think that fake news is harmful?
That depends. I think there is what Bart was talking about. I'm going to generalize this. Would you call that clickbait? So people wanting to click on the website so they'll put like a weird.
Yeah, like, with clickbait. Definitely clickbait.
But
yes.
With clickbait, usually it is they try and get you to go to the website with some kind of title, and once you're there, it turns out to be something different.
Yeah.
With fake news, they just tell you exactly what you want to hear, even if it's factually incorrect. So it's like the article that comes along with the title, if I'm correct here, if the article that comes along with the title is also completely factually incorrect.
Yeah,
but it upsets you.
The
it is similar to clickbait, though.
The titles are very clickbaity, yeah.
Fake news probably affects people in a negative way because that it can, for example, in the Trump presidency, a lot of people talked about Hillary winning, you know, pretty much guaranteed. And that's probably arose from a lot of the news companies saying that Hillary is going to win. And a lot of the news companies are run by major corporations, banks, and money, which have stock invested in different, you know, and they are very much based, or it's an international market now, so they look at geopolitical reasons will drive why what kind of news they want to be really displayed in the world. So in that sense, it did affect people of America negatively or positively. We don't know yet because we don't know how good of a president Trump is going to be. Or in our sense, in the UK, we had Brexit, where a lot of people were saying that it's not going to be Brexit. Don't worry, guys. And that's because a lot of banks in the country do not want Brexit to happen. So they would fund the media saying Brexit don't happen. But then you have this double sort of double bluff thing where people that think that, oh, there's no point voting Hillary. I mean, there's no point me going to a polling station. She's going to win anyway. Or there's no point me voting in because, you know, no one's going to vote out anyway. So this weird illusion when you're not actually saying what the rest of the population of the country is actually, you know, the most of the population is saying. And you create this illusion and that probably ends up being a massive double bluff.
I think it has. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's very dangerous because it makes existing divisiveness in a country worse, and it in some sense it might be even one of the main causes for it. When a country becomes divided and you have the simplest example is Trump and Clinton, this left wing opinions, Democrat opinions and Republican opinions, they become ever more extreme and they start. Or they stop communicating almost entirely with each other. Where if you have a slight Democrat bias, you will only see bad things about Trump and good things about Hillary. And if you have a slight Republican bias, you will only see bad things about Hillary and good things about Trump. And there's a very interesting experience you can then have, which is that you find one article that disagrees with your opinion. And once reading that one, you're recommended more articles, and it's like you open into this bubble of a completely different narrative from you. Because one person is fed a completely different narrative from another, because in one case, the fake news is capitalizing on one person's opinion and making it as absurd as possible to be clicked. And then on the opposite end, there's other fake news people making articles for the other opinion that are absurd. And then no one ever really talks to each other or finds a middle ground because they've become it's become their opinion that the other person is not worth talking to because they must be mad to disagree with them because all they've heard is how extreme how extreme the alternative opinion is.
I've got a question for Suresh. Do you reckon that fake news has always existed? But due to social media and people realizing and being able to search, whereas previously newspapers were able to print this rubbish and banks were able to influence this in the, you know, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and people weren't as influenced, but as now people are getting smarter, I use that term as in there's more opportunity for them to see what's going on. And that's why this emergence of people realizing, you know what, these companies are lying to us and the truth is somewhere in the middle and we have to find truth by ourselves rather than someone literally spoon feeding us what's happening.
Okay, now there's a distinction to be made here because there's two ways of looking at it. So you have fake news where there's people out there who are making fake news and profiting from it and just sending it through social media on independent sites. And there's also modern day propaganda, which is what more is what you guys are talking about, modern-day propaganda where people are saying, you know, these guys are doing this and these guys are doing that. So there's actually a big distinction between the two. So, and when I was looking into it, I thought fake news was just modern-day propaganda, but it's not really being made by either party. It's just being made by individuals in different in countries completely remote from the US who are just trying to make a quick buck. But modern-day propaganda is also a big thing. And that's completely different. And that's always been around. Propaganda has always been around in media. Whoever's funding the media or whoever, whatever the reporter's agenda is, there'll always be a bias and there'll always be some type of, or there could be a propaganda towards the article that you read. Oh, sorry.
How can we go about solving media bias?
Hey, media bias is a very difficult difficult thing to solve. The only way I could even figure out how to do it is by watching both ends of the spectrum. So that most of the media you watch, so like BBC News and whatever, is a sort of a left sort of media source that you look at. So you also have to look at right media sources, which aren't very common, I've got to say, that you can find, at least in Australia. I don't know of many right media sources. There is quite a few on the internet, and you can also jump on like independent sites like WikiLeaks.
So what you're saying is you can solve it by not by the media's end, but by the audience end. So this is what I've really found funny was that what does fake news actually say about the people? Like, what the hell? 50,000 people are completely buying into that fake news. Like, they think that really happened.
Yeah, I think what you're missing.
It really says how ignorant they can be. How can you solve this media bias? Would be just to have a good audience who has good literacy rate and who's capable of reading alternative media outlets.
Absolutely.
Everything that they can find, right?
That's how to solve the bias. To solve fake news is to make sure you're reading from credible sites.
So exactly.
I'm trying to make the distinction here.
The solution is in the audience, in the reader.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sorry,
there's,
I missed that.
There's a big problem with the idea. I don't think you can ever really have a form of media where the media is not biased, because firstly, we talked about this in the conversation styles, is when we talked about someone having a base of knowledge. So normally these sort of media companies that have got propaganda behind them, you don't really need that much in-depth knowledge to really know about what's going on. You can pretty much turn on the channel and CNN will really dumb it down for you, which is what they do. And that's a lot more attractive than something that's purely factual, I think. And people want to see and want to read what they want, if that makes sense. Because you don't want to, if let's say you're a Trump supporter, you don't want to read the news about Hillary winning. You'd rather go onto this website, which gives you this false sense of illusion that, oh, Trump is going to win or whatever. So I think media bias is always going to exist.
So what are those alternatives?
I think it's the role of the reporter to make it interesting for all people. Just because they can't understand it, they should be tailoring their news to all audiences and not just a select few. So just because people think, oh, this is more simple, I'll watch this, the reporter of more, more factual news should be making, tailoring it towards them as well. Yeah, go ahead.
I hold the belief that your news agencies are always going to be, even when they don't want to, they're going to be unintentionally biased at the least. And so the only thing in my mind to do is really sort of what you were saying, is that we as the readers try and diversify our sources so that we see people that have separate views, and we ask or we try and get the media companies to be honest about their bias. I much more prefer reading a news source where I know that they are specifically right-wing leaning or left-wing leaning, and that they're honest about that, and then compare that to with the opposite leaning media coverage of the same thing. It's easier when they're honest about their bias instead of acting unbiased, which is what, for example, the BBC always does. The BBC is the unbiased news source of the UK. It doesn't say it's really left leaning. It doesn't say it's biased.
Just because it says it's not biased, though. I think the BBC is biased for a lot of things, and it's actually...
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, so...
Yeah. That's exactly my point. They have to be honest about that.
Yeah, but they're not going to be, because the whole idea
is... That is good, because, like, I agree with what you're saying, because, like, once you know... Like, I search for, like, right-wing stuff as well, because, like, I do want to see what they have to report as well and stuff. Because it's always interesting to see the other opinion. And so... I think that's the exact way you do it. That's the exact way to tackle it. And that doesn't mean it gets solved, though. Because you can always have crappy news regardless in crappy sources. But as long as you can semi-sift through, hopefully most of the time you do have a decent understanding of what's going on.
Well, the problem is that we can say that we want sort of truth, news that is truthful, whatever. But the whole idea is these media companies are companies and they want to make money. So either that is reporting first, so that's where a lot of the fake news comes from, when people want to report first, so they make up a lie or they speculate about what's happening, but they don't say they're speculating, because who cares about, you know, oh, this is what we think has happened, this is what has happened. And the companies that are funding them don't want truth, they want profits. They want the market to be affected so that they make money.
Yeah, it's also true.
That's again some kind of bias that they're, or the thing that they're actually focused on is that honest reporting is usually comes or may come secondary to a different priority, which is that they want to have more viewership. But you do have magazine, or you do have news sources that try and stay honest or stay reputable, because that is their entire point. They try and not sort of become fake news.
I think what is helpful though is like what I do is I don't read, if I want to read British news and what's happening here, I tend to go on to another country's news and read what's happening here. So I like look at Russian Times. I don't ever want to read what Russian Times have to say about Russia, but they tend to have an unbiased view about what's happening in Europe. Or what's happening in China. Oh, yeah.
Do you think they have an unbiased view of what's happening in Europe?
Well, they have the most unbiased news that I think. Because the idea of bias is very, very sort of, you create your own sort of what you think is biased. So for me personally, you have to find your own what you think is unbiased and stick with that. Because there will always be a slight deviation on the news. That goes by the communication, you know. You can't ever have the absolute truth.
Yeah, as I said before, like, even just, I don't think you should just rely on any one source, even Russian media or Chinese media or whatever. Having a diversified opinion should hopefully level it out.
I think it all comes back to a problem that people have in wanting things to be slightly simpler than it really is, and being prone to preferring a simple explanation for something rather than a more complicated explanation of something. So we prefer to decide whether something is good or bad in following some simple logic, like thinking of events of having only one cause, like the reason why Trump was elected was only because of Russian hacking, for example. Mm-hmm. Even though that might be a small factor of many things that led to one thing happening. We prefer simpler explanations. And that's something that we have to learn not to prefer. And that's really tricky, because that comes from inside and everyone has to do that for it to work.
The idea is the fact that we've already seen throughout history how fake news has had an absolutely devastating effect. I mean, the worst example of that is probably World War II during what happened, the Holocaust. So Hitler created this sort of fake idea where, Jews are to blame, and the fake news was printed in the media and everyone believed it. So it's crazy that people did not... Humans are very good at learning from their mistakes, but they haven't learned from one of the biggest mistakes they've made in history, when they created this fake ideology to blame a group or to have the exact answer, to create this sort of weird air that everyone... that one person knows the answer.
Yeah.
And also,
they also look for news that sort of resonates with them or resonates with their feelings. And so once they find an article, they can just sift through a lot of stuff and say, oh, crap, until they see a headline that resonates with them, makes them angry, and gives it a good read. And if they keep hitting or going down that path, it's also pretty dangerous, because once that can just fuel their emotions and get them angry and get them one-sided. So it really is, once again, up to the reader to make sure they look at all sources and not just read stuff because it resonates with their feelings.
Yeah, so this is very funny. So the readers are often, they have bias, but what is this bias based on? Is it faith-based? Is it scientific-based? Or is it just emotion-based? Surely it is about politics, and often it is fake news, but... these people, they don't follow any empirical research methods. They don't methodologize how they approach these news and those positions. They rather just listen to the fake news. They listen to their friends. They listen to their echo chambers, and then they base their biases on those emotions they have with each other. It's not really about empirical research and trying to understand what is actually happening and trying to find out all the different alternative news sources for the single event that happened. So it's definitely, this is, I think the bias is definitely in a very emotional way for these people.
Yeah.
The idea there is, over the fact that the media companies aren't really targeting educated people. I say that with full sort of no offense mended to offense. I mean, they want the general public. The whole idea is they want to get people that aren't necessarily university educated, that are, because most of the population isn't university educated. So they want to, the people that the general public don't have the way of thinking that maybe you have, where you think, is this emotional base, is this philosophical base or whatever. They tend to just lap up whatever they're given.
But I think that is not limited to people that aren't university educated.
Yeah, but
I think that we get a different chunk of fake news, that it's specially packaged for people that have the sensibilities and opinions that people from universities have. And then there's a different package of fake news for people that aren't university educated that will work better with them. We are just as much
when,
a part
when I say, of, when I say of this educated, kind of
brainwashing as everyone else is.
When I say educated, when I say educated is, I mean educated on that topic. So when I say a lot of people, for example, don't know what's going on in politics. So what's happening with Brexit? You don't know the ins and outs. You don't know the rules. So they're not really aiming for people that know exactly what's going on. They're aiming for people like me, like maybe you didn't know, probably didn't know that much about Brexit. People like us that aren't educated on the topic. So yeah, they can really, really lap us up and really use the bias against us. So you mean
to say they target people who aren't experts?
Exactly. And it's easier to target experts. If I start, again, I go back to the piano thing, I start saying something about the piano and start making fake news up about the piano and really being weird about it, you will immediately know I'm bullshitting you.
But if
someone says that to me, I'll be like, maybe it's true. I don't know. Yeah.
And if you like that fact on an emotional basis, if it's a fact you enjoy, you'll take
it up. Someone says, yeah, Bert's piano is actually a harmonica, I'll be like, oh, yeah.
You used a very nice keyword there. You said the like. So a lot of this fake news there spread on social media, especially the Facebook. So there you can press the like button. I like this. Then another person says, oh, you like this, I'm going to like this as well. What would be better, there would be an article and somebody presses the button and then they decide, this is true, this is not fake. Instead of
there is a button like that now. You can label things as fake news.
Yeah, but as if that would somehow take the place of the like button, since the like button is already such a customary button.
Yeah,
it's tricky there, because what they found, Facebook has tried to start solving this problem of completely fake news sites, and what's also getting caught in their filters, when they're filtering out fake news content, is they're also filtering out some conservative websites. And the websites are getting really upset because they're like, wait, we've just got a different opinion on this. We're not actually fake news. And they get cut out as well, because the people doing the fact-checking, these companies that Facebook cooperated with that do fact-checking, have a bias of their own. And so Facebook starts censoring things for the good of the people on the website, surely it's well-intentioned. If they start censoring things, they might start censoring things that they shouldn't be censoring.
So yeah, we're just basically going back in history where we used to censor things, and now wrong opinions are censored. People are not allowed to empirically research and fact-based find out what actually happened. Since it's just emotional.
But how do you find the facts in a day where you can't actually go to a war site or ask the people directly? All you can really do is rely on media.
That's always going to be the problem, that we do need media. We can't just abolish it.
So what sort of alternative news sources are there? Is that what you're asking?
No. I'm not saying that, because we just said that's the way to go around it. But I'm saying that if you want to be empirical about it, it's very difficult. Like, even source checking is pretty difficult when people don't want to be known as the source and stuff like that. And usually I don't see many articles talking about their sources and stuff like that either. So it's very hard to be like factual about, okay, this guy got it from here, let's check their sources and stuff like that.
I've actually created fake news myself once. I tweeted out a fake quote that I completely made up, right? And it actually got filtered through to like a social media account which had 500,000 followers. And it had like 30 retweets. I was just thinking, like, that shows how easy it is to get, like, what I'm talking about, social media and these things, how easy it is to create sort of this idea of fake news. I think us sitting on the sofa can create news right now if we want to.
Can I ask what you said?
You probably won't get the reference. It was a football one. It was a football reference.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I said something like, a player said that I'm bigger than the club, I've won more trophies or something like that, and that just took off. Then he did a tweet later on when they didn't want to get, like, it sourced back to me. Just like, hey, where did you get the tweet from?
Some random guy tweeted this, let's all just boycott him and send him death threats.
It's very easy to create fake news, and it's always going to exist because of this international sort of...
Okay, let's start wrapping it up. Anyone else want to say a few last words?
Gay.
That covers it. Who wants to do the outro?
Well, I'm doing the outro.
Okay, do the outro, damn it.
Anyway, guys, that was Red Switch the podcast with me, Adamia, Bart,
yeah,
Oiva, and our foreign correspondent from all the way from Melbourne, Australia, Suresh.
Hey guys.
Woo! We'll see you guys next week where we discuss other topics ranging from are scientists hypocrites?
To what questions can you not ask?